welcome to the Try Talking Sport podcast, hosted by me, Joanne Murphy. Whether you are an athlete, adventurer, endurance enthusiast, or simply have an interest in sport, you have come to the right place for inspiration, encouragement, motivation, and as always, a little bit of entertainment. Well, how are we doing? How is your race season shaping up? What have you signed up to? Or are you still making those all-important racing plans? If you have been following my socials, you'll know that I am now on the countdown to my race at Ironman 70.3 Mallorca on May 11th. I've been ticking off the training sessions every day and really can't believe how quickly the clock is ticking down to race day. The last time I raced this event was in 2017. I'm as excited as I am nervous to get to the start line. Some days I think I'm totally invincible and could do the race in the morning. Other days I am really questioning what I was even doing signing up to it. But I have enjoyed the training, I've had lots of fun along the way, and I do enjoy seeing the numbers get better as the training progressed over the past few weeks. I had a blast in Lanzarote last month with Oliver Harkin of Primed Coaching and Paddy McLaughlin from podiumfit.ie on their camp. I was lucky enough to be able to escape the Irish weather for 10 days and surprised myself with the amount of training I managed to clock up in the wind, hills and heat of the island. We had a super group on the camp with a variety of abilities and racing aspirations, and regardless of the level of fitness, the camp was very inclusive and lots of fun with plenty of banter every day. And now, with just over 4 weeks to race day, the final preparation is most definitely getting underway, and I'm hoping my Lanzarote adventures will pay dividends in Mallorca. In the meantime, my 2024 announcing season starts to ramp up this month with a trip to Croatia to announce the Four Islands MTB race, part of the Epic series. This is taking place next week. It's my first time in Croatia and first time at this event, which is all very exciting. I'm hoping to be able to share my early season schedule very soon. There's some of the usual events in there, as well as a few new ones, which should lead to a very exciting and full schedule for 2024, for which I am very grateful. Now, before we dive into this episode, some information that might be of interest to those of you racing at home or abroad over the coming months. Firstly, Castlereagh Series have events in Ireland, the UK and France. And at Loch Coutre in Galway on May 25th and 26th, there are a huge number of events to choose from across swim, bike and run. There's the National Sprint Aquathlon Championships and the National Mixed Team Relay Club Championships taking place on the Saturday, with the Youth Series events taking place on Sunday. They've also teamed up with Triathlon Ireland to host a women's only event on the Saturday as well. This is a non-competitive event aimed at women who maybe had raced previously and hadn't participated in triathlon for a while but wanted to get back into the swing of it. Or maybe this will be of interest to someone who wants to try out a sprint triathlon without the pressure of racing. There's plenty of details on all of the events hosted by Castlereagh Series on their website, and you can use the code TTS24CRS to get 25% discount on your race entry. Staying in Galway, Galway Tri Club will host a sprint triathlon, the Tribesman, on June 16th at the University of Galway. This is shaping up to be a super race with lots of people already signed up to enjoy the buzz of racing in the city of the Tribes. If you fancy a weekend in the West in Galway City, use the code TTS to get €5 discount on your race entry. And this discount is valid until the end of April. You'll find the race listed on the Try Talking Sport website. If you are planning to race abroad this year and have yet to sort out your bike transport for your international race, be sure to check out Team Truck. And if you use the code TTS35 when booking online, you will get a €35 discount on all bookings made until the end of May. You can check them out on www.teamtruck.eu. With my own race preparation well underway, I started using the Precision Fuel and Hydration products. The carb drink and chews seem to be going down a treat and not affecting my very delicate stomach so far. Fingers crossed I can keep my gut in check in Mallorca. We've teamed up with George from Peak Sports to offer a 10% discount off any purchases over €65. So pop over to my Instagram page at Try Talking Sport to get the link to get your order in for your Precision Fuel and Hydration products. With some monster training sessions, well, monster for me, being completed, I am utilising lots of the Nuasan products, from the body wash to the moisturiser, and of course my favourite one of all, the CBD Muscle Gel. If you haven't tried them out, be sure to look them up online on www.nuasan.com and use the code TTS15 to get a 15% discount online. Finally, one last event plug, and this is for Mondello 24 Cycle on the 22nd and 23rd of June. This ultra cycling event is such a unique, exhilarating experience that can be undertaken by individuals or teams of 2, 4 or 8. starting at 12 p.m. on Saturday and finishing at 12 p.m. on Sunday, with the aim of completing as many laps of the track as possible, all whilst enjoying the thrill of bike racing and the buzz of the camaraderie in the pits for the 24-hour event. If you need some insight into why I think you should gather a gang to sign up, then check out my 5 Reasons Why article on the Try Talking Sport website. There's actually lots of great articles and updates on the site. Emma Porter playing a blinder at keeping the website up to date. Okay, so now it's time to dive into our chat with Annie Brooks from the UK, who in 2012 was diagnosed with epilepsy. In 2014, she completed her first triathlon and in October 2023 conquered the Ironman World Championship in Kona, crossing the finish line like a boss with the biggest smile on her face. Annie's journey in sport and in life is one of resilience, determination and courage. Her positivity and passion for life and triathlon spills over through her bubbly personality, despite the challenges and obstacles her health can put in her way. With stress and fatigue a key factor in triggering an epileptic fit, it is a wonder she is able to get to the start line of a race in one piece, fit and ready to tackle the swim, bike and run adventure that lies ahead. Never mind, get herself to the finish line of the most iconic Ironman race of them all in Kona. This really is an inspiring chat with Annie, who shares a snippet of her life, living and thriving with a hidden disability, one that when it strikes, and it can strike at any time, can be so debilitating, frustrating, and cause havoc to her daily living. Never mind her training for triathlon, which she simply does for fun and because she loves it. It was my sister Michelle who asked me to get Annie as a guest on the podcast after Kona. She herself inspired and in awe of Annie's ability to live her life to the full despite her epilepsy. For those of you who don't know, Michelle has had epilepsy since her early teens, and coupled with her cerebral palsy and the nature of her epilepsy, it can be a struggle to live life to the full. For Michelle, and I think for many of us, Annie offers a beacon of hope into what is possible if you can find the adaptations to enable you to thrive despite your own individual challenges. And when you find the sport or activity that ignites such passion in you, it can help you to pursue a life brimming with fun and adventure. If you enjoyed this episode and want to follow Annie's upcoming adventures, go to her website, www.talesofanniebean.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at It's Annie Bean. For now though, go grab a cuppa and enjoy the show. Annie Brooks, welcome to the Try Talking Sport podcast. I am delighted to finally get to chat with you. So tell me where you are and what you are up to at the moment, because from your Instagram, you have the best life of travel and fun and sport, and you travel more than I do, so I'm quite jealous.
So obviously doing triathlon still, but I'm actually currently in France in the mountains taking on snow sport, as you do, just to kind of break things up. I've been learning to snowboard. I've realized I'm a terrible skier, but I've been really enjoying snowboarding. So yeah, I'm in France, and I'm whilst I'm here, I'm still training for my triathlons. So
Yeah, you have a big year ahead of triathlon. And of course, I first came across you at Ironman 70.3 Staffordshire. And yes, I did. And yeah. Then, of course, at the Ironman World Championship in Kona. But Annie, we're not going to talk too much about your triathlon to begin with, if that's okay, because you have a very unique story to share with our Try Talking Sport listeners, and your journey is hugely inspiring. So tell me a little bit about your background first, generally, and then how triathlon has become such a huge part of your life.
Yeah, I mean, I guess first and foremost, I was not sporty or active before all of this. And bizarrely, since what I'm about to tell you, I've obviously been I'm doing more things than I've ever done before, like travel, sport, everything. So I was diagnosed with epilepsy in 2012 after having it was going on for years without me realizing. So I have what they call focal impaired awareness seizures, which aren't what kind of people associate as a textbook kind of seizure. You know, most people assume that epilepsy is, you know, having something very visual, convulsing. You know, they're called tonic-clonic grand mal. And mine, I look like I'm still there, but I've completely checked out. It's very confusing. You get extreme brain fog. I mean, to be honest with you, I would wish them on my worst enemy. They are the most scary things I could ever the most scary things ever. But I didn't know I was having them because I hadn't got enough education about the kind of, there was more than one kind of epilepsy. So it went undiagnosed for a year. And when I was finally diagnosed, I then obviously was being stubborn and was like, no, you're not gonna stop me. I'm gonna try everything and I'm gonna see how much I can push myself. So got into all my stuff afterwards. But yeah, epilepsy, later life diagnosed, didn't know I had it. And so I've made it my mission to educate others because there wasn't enough out there. I Googled my symptoms, doctor Googled my symptoms. Doctors thought I was just depressed or had anxiety. And I was like, yeah, I don't feel the best after these things, but I'm a pretty chipper person. So I didn't quite, the pieces of the puzzle weren't connecting. And so I just kept asking questions and trying to do research. And it was somebody who I'd met at a blogging thing. She'll forever be my angel really with this, because she was like, I have my, that sounds like my epilepsy. How is this epilepsy sort of thing? And that's when I went to the doctor and I was like, look, send me to a neurologist. If it's not epilepsy or anything like that, I will go down the antidepressant, and look at the fact I might just be depressed, because I didn't want to take anything without actually getting a confirmation. I'm very much like that. I wanted to, this is what it is. This is what's going to help it. And the neurologist basically chatted through it with me, and I even played it down, and he turned around and said, you're having, they called it, once upon a time they called it complex partial seizures, it got changed to focal impaired awareness seizures, and he said, that's what you're having, did you drive here? I don't want you driving anymore, you need to drive your car home, and you can't have it, you can't drive anymore. Went through tests, and the EEG basically picked up brain waves that were epileptic. And that's it in a very, very, this spread out for like ages, but that is how I got diagnosed. And to say it was a shock is an understatement. I was relieved and also mortified as well that this, no one had believed me. And I got low afterwards, to be quite honest, ironically, after they were saying this, I got really low about it. And that's when, obviously, my husband introduced me to triathlon because he got into it and was like, maybe you need a focus and maybe we need to divert your mind attention. And as you know, triathlon, you can't really focus on anything but trying to deal with all three sports and all the juggling of it. So, yeah, I mean, do you know what? I haven't spoken about the journey for a little while and it's weird sort of just chatting through it because it was horrible and so good to finally get a diagnosis. I mean, yeah, that was huge. But that's why I've always made it my mission to sort of bring more awareness, because I had no idea. And so many of the people have no idea still that there are other kinds of epilepsy and how to handle it.
You mentioned there that you, when you have the fits, you just check out. And they're not normal. When we say normal fits, we think of somebody on the ground having, yes, a fit, jerking, maybe biting their tongue, that kind of thing. But you say they're not the normal type. So what happens to you, Annie, when you have a fit?
So there's focal awareness seizures and focal impaired awareness seizures. So mine, basically, I get what they call an aura. It's kind of like a warning sign one's about to happen, and it can last like seconds. Sometimes it can happen and then nothing actually quite happens. So with mine, I'll get this aura and I'm like, oh no, I can't even describe, it's so difficult, I can't even describe the sensation, but it's very unique to that situation. Like, I don't get this feeling anywhere else. It's just a feeling, and it's like a rising feeling that comes over, and I'll have seconds, and then I will lose the ability to speak. And I will lose the ability to coordinate myself. So often it will even escalate further and my hand will like twitch. It'll open and close, or it'll shake, or I'll shake my hands like I'm showing you at the moment, but I'm like shaking my hands. And then I will lip smack and swallow like repeatedly. Sometimes I even close my eyes, because overstimulation and too much activity makes it worse. People talking during, it feels like deja vu. It's so intense. It's just like a complete overload in the body, but I can't necessarily pull myself to safety, or, if I don't take that warning sign and then go, okay, right, I need to just get myself into safety as quick as possible. Then, you know, that's what, that's that warning. That's what that warning does. But I'll be out for maybe 2-3 minutes and then slowly I'll come back out of it. It's like suddenly it's dropping. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and breathe. And it just goes through your body and I'm still. And then I start to get the ability to talk again. But it's really hard to try and talk. Words just don't come out how they should. I'm laughing about it because I must sound ridiculous to people, but it's like your tongue's swollen and you just can't think about what to say. I had one actually in front of strangers, which is, I'm going to be honest, having them in front of strangers is one of the most biggest fears ever, because they just, because people don't necessarily know about the epilepsy, and because I haven't got time to go, oh, by the way, I'm going to have a seizure, but it's not like what you think it's going to be. I'm going to be upright. I haven't got time. There's no time to go down that explanation hole. And I remember I had one afterwards, and this lovely lady from this reception got me in. So she knew I'd obviously was having a seizure. Could I say seizure? Could I say epilepsy? The words are just gone. All communication had completely gone, which is, you know, I'm laughing about it now. At the time, I was mortified because I was so embarrassed and just couldn't. Yeah. So basically, it's like a loose cable. It's like someone's just completely disconnected my ability to communicate and coordinate myself. And it just takes a little time to reconnect it. But it's really scary, as you can probably understand, not being able to tell anybody that is what you're experiencing, and it's going to pass, so don't panic. But it's, yeah, it's horrible. It is.
And in your head, like when you're having the seizure, what's happening in, what are you thinking about or in your head, or are you just completely in it? Like, you know, like if you were to describe what it's like inside in your head when you're having a seizure.
Okay. So the feeling you get when you get the warning sign, like I say, is like nothing you experience ever. The feelings and the sensations I get within the actual seizure, like nothing else, couldn't explain it. The only thing that I can tell you is I get the extreme fear. Like, it's like nothing else is, I'd say it's worse than like the idea of being chased. It's like, it's its own emotion. Some people get extreme joy, I've been told. I'm definitely not one of them, unfortunately. I would love extreme joy, but I get extreme fear and I feel very, very trapped. The problem also comes is that after the seizure, I've pretty much forgotten it I've forgotten the tiny details within like 2 minutes of coming out of it. So I've completely forgotten what's happened, what I did. So I'm normally, my husband, I'm like, for the rest of the day, I'm like, so what actually happened? Did I do this? What can you tell me? Did it actually happen? Because you start to question whether you've just imagined it, because you've just totally checked out. It's, you're half there and half not. That's the only way I can kind of describe it, that you're kind of half in the building, half out the building sort of thing. So
1 foot in the door, 1 foot out the door.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why they're so horrible. And that's why I think most people really fear having seizures, because you are out of control, essentially. Mm-hmm. You haven't got the ability to tell people. With mine, haven't got the ability to tell people, haven't got the ability to, you know, kind of highlight that I am going to be fine, it'll pass, but I can't say that during one. So, and it's embarrassing, really, because I can't, like, sometimes I might make noise, apparently. I don't know. Like, I've tried to talk, you know. It's a case by case basis, but what I've kind of described is generally the gist of what I experience.
After a seizure, how do you pick yourself up to keep moving? Like, say you're working today, for example, we do this episode and yeah, then you're working and then maybe you have a seizure for whatever reason, but you still have to go back to work because you have meetings booked in for the afternoon. How do you do that?
I'll be honest, it's really hard, depending on how intense the seizure is, or if I've got really stressed out. So say if it's one that I've had in public and it's in front of people and there's a busy act, like, and it's really hard, I will really struggle to bounce back. I'll get a headache, which normally happens straight afterwards. And to be honest with you, recently, when they are actually really hard, I just cry. I cry afterwards. Normally my husband's like, give me a hug and comforting me, because it's just, it's so intense. You've just suddenly dropped back down and it's so hard to bounce back. But I normally have a sit down, I'll cuddle the dog, I'll have a cup of tea, and I'll try and reframe it and go, no, I need to push on. And I normally, you know, with if it's calls and stuff, I normally tell the people, I'm saying, just going to let you know, I've had seizures today, because I find if I'm more transparent with people, then I feel less nervous about another one happening. Do you know what I mean? I've become more honest as it's gone on. I used to not tell anybody and that made it worse. And so now I'm sort of like, if I'm transparent about it, that makes it so much better. And I can kind of move on. But I will say I sometimes have to go and have a quick sleep, start again, almost like, you know, go to sleep and wake up again, you know, just 10, 20 minutes. And then I'm back and I'm like, right, okay, cup of tea, cuddle the dog, maybe go for a walk, divert my attention away from fixating on what's just happened is often the best thing I can do. You know, I'm not saying I'll go for like a 15-mile run or something. It'll be like, take the dog for a walk, go to the shop. You know what I mean? Like just something very chill. And yeah, you know what? You just have to, if I stopped doing stuff and I stopped, you know, I because of seizures, and I let my life come to a halt, I'd never do anything. So that's kind of, I have to keep that in my memory bank to remind myself afterwards, like, no, don't let this become a thing. Move on.
Most people would consider not doing anything or maybe doing something light would be to go for a walk or to do some yoga. But you have gone from, you know, having an epileptic diagnosis to taking on triathlon, and more specifically Ironman, racing at the Ironman World Championship in Kona last year, your very first Ironman. You mentioned stress there, that can potentially trigger a fit. And yeah, as triathletes, we use sport, we enjoy it, but it can be quite stressful. So how in the name of God are you able to do triathlon, get stressed, be nervous on a start line, a finish line, be nervous in the swim, bike, run, embrace the whole, I mean, the noise level that we make on the microphone, the sound system, the overstimulation that's there for an announcer, never mind for somebody who has epilepsy, is insane. So talk to me about triathlon, how you got involved. And I know it was your husband, Nick, said to do it for something to focus on. But you've gone from, you could have been playing golf, where it's nice quiet, and a nice walk with a golf club, to doing triathlon, where you're in the middle of the ocean, you're up the side of a mountain on a bike, and then you have to run.
It's bonkers, isn't it? I mean, to be honest with you, I'm terrible at golf, so that wouldn't be a great start. I'd probably get more frustrated at golf and not being able to hit the ball more than anything else. I'm not very good at ball sports, that's for starters. But my husband actually, I did my first sprint triathlon in 2014. So obviously a couple of years after I got diagnosed. And he'd said, why don't you do it for a charity? Now, I don't normally do stuff for charity, but I really wanted to, and it was for an epilepsy charity. So that was the driving force. And with that, I had to learn how to do front crawl, and I had to learn how to do open water swimming. And I found that basically by doing that, but I found that I absolutely loved open water swimming. And I was like, oh, well, I love swimming. This is amazing. And I kind of found training for it gave me a bit of focus, which you can't really let your mind wander. Now, they say that, you know, by having a focus, it's actually good for you, because you're not, you can, I sometimes think you can encourage a seizure, my kind of seizure, by fixating on it too much and worrying about it too much. So actually having a bit of a diversion has been amazing for me. And to be honest with you, I just got hooked on it because it was so challenging and exciting. And I thrived on the announcers, all the atmosphere. I felt like so motivated. And even talking about like Kona now, the feeling of crossing that finish line is, you can see it on the pictures. Like I couldn't believe that I'd done it. And I get that with every single triathlon I do. There's just, it's so rewarding of how hard you've pushed yourself and how much. I don't know. It's just the best feeling in the world. And I love the challenge of it. But with that, you know, like you say, I have got epilepsy. I've got to be careful with it. So my husband actually is a coach as well. He's an Ironman coach. And he basically, we work around my condition. So if I've had, we have lots of rest. If I've had, you know, if I've had a seizure, we might do, you know, depending on how intense it is, we might pull it back and it's like recovery stuff. And then when I've kind of bounced back a day or so later, then we'll add it back in. But we are really, we are really careful with it. And that takes the pressure off as well. You know, I'm not thinking, oh, I need to do all this time. Do you know what? I'll get there when I get there. Times don't really matter to me. I just want to get to the finish line. Because if I start putting pressure on myself to hit certain times, that's probably going to stress me out. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm there to high five, smile, soak in the atmosphere as what you get from a triathlon race, an Ironman race, and just enjoy it and know that I've pushed myself really. I've worked so hard to get there. So I find triathlon, you know, talking about it gives me this really excited feeling in my stomach. I love it so much. And yeah, and doing Kona was just the, oh my gosh, I love it so much. The feel like that will probably be one of the most amazing things I've ever done in my life. And I can't believe I did it and didn't have any seizures or epilepsy issues throughout the entire day. I just used the nerves, pushed them forward, and just made sure I looked up, soaked in where I was. You know, I made sure on the bike, like I sat up and was like, wow, what where I am. I mean, I'm getting blown sideways, but I'm loving this. Do you know what I mean? And just tried to flip the potential negative into this positive.
So you just had typical athlete issues in Kona, which was two punctures and a broken brake.
Yes, I did. I did. Oh my gosh. Do you know what? I'd been practicing like changing my inner tube and stuff before. I wanted to make sure, not right before the race, but we'd done it in training and I wanted to make sure I felt as comfortable as possible. So as I was out on the bike, I wasn't that far into it. I'd gone through like the main bit where I saw everyone was like, yay, this is exciting. Let's do this. And as I was coming out and we're heading out, I just heard this. I was in the zone, it was going good, and I picked up my speed, and all of a sudden I just heard this. And I looked down and I was like, I looked in front of me and I just saw my whole thing go down. Oh, my tire go down. I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And I'm really surprised even now how I reacted, because I thought, if that was to happen, would I get stressed? This would be the epilepsy trigger. I would just get overwhelmed. And no, like I was in the zone. I was like, right, let's get this moving. Right, let's get changing. And so changed it. And I was like, what? Amazing. Ladies were coming past. This is why I loved the Kona race with all the women. They were like, you've got this, girl. You can do this. Like as I was going past, I was like, yes, I will. I'll change it. It's fine. So they were all like, you okay? Everyone was coming past. It's like, great. Got it changed, started to go on the road. Now, my error, obviously, I'd obviously not quite checked in, and then whatever it was small, and it went again. And I just thought, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm not going to make cutoff, because I'd not had the best swim for me. And I was planning on picking up as much time as possible on the bike, because I was already, you know, I was already ahead of where I wanted to be. I was feeling good about it. But this was going on and I can't, because I'm not super quick, which I know that I'm now going to do this. I'm going to do training to do as quick as possible and do it timed, but I'm not the quickest with it. So it took me a little bit longer. Luckily, some bike support came across and I waved them down. I was like, help, help. Can you help me? Because my brake's gone as well. So, and it had just gone floppy and I hadn't got, I'd be honest, I didn't know how to tighten the cables properly on my bike. And I thought a brake is something I definitely know I need, especially coming down Harvey and around there. And I thought, I can't risk this. So they luckily helped me. So as we were there, I explained I've got epilepsy and I just said, I'm just trying not to get stressed about this. I feel okay, but I'm warning you in case something happens. And I just sat there, like, I just stood, ate and drank, and was like, well, this is the perfect opportunity to get as much fuel in as possible. They said to me, they were amazing. I went and took them some afterwards. I actually went to the bike shop the next day and I took them some Athletic Brewing, and I was like, here you go. Thank you so much for saving me. So they were like, we're going to follow you a little bit, make sure you're fine. And yeah, and off I went. I mean, I was playing chase, definitely. I felt like, I've still got the marathon to run, but let's focus on the bike. Just get on with it. Get out there. I mean, there was no chance of any penalties with bike being close to anybody because it was so spread out by this point. And I just, like, I was just playing chase with cutoff, but I was so focused on it and I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to fail. There was no chance of me not doing it. I wanted to get round. I have got to do this. I need to make this. I need to get round to that turnaround point as quick as possible, pick up that, but I need to hit those times and get back. And I did. It was so nice racking my bike. I can't even begin. And I saw my husband. I was like, how long have I got? Am I okay time-wise? And so, because I hadn't hit my watch properly. There'd been a few tech stuff and I'd not hit my watch. So I couldn't figure out what time I was on, trying to calculate it. And to be honest with you, having to keep calculating time, which actually kept me so occupied. I was like, right, so if I run this time, how long I've got, that's going to take me this time, then with that, you know, this time, so I think I'm okay. So having that distraction, I just couldn't let any epilepsy in. There was, you know, if it being completely honest with you, if it's going to happen anywhere, it would always be the run. Because I find that when your heart rate goes quite high, my body can't figure out if it's stress or not. And that, I think, you know, I've had a couple of seizures during a run before, nothing to do with triathlon, like years and years and years ago. So I'm really cautious about how high my heart rate goes, making sure I'm as chilled and as happy as possible. So, you know, I chatted to so many people on the way at Kona. I know people are there to do, you know, they're the best in the world. They're there to hit certain times. And I just wanted to soak it in and just get to the finish line. I didn't care if I was last. I didn't care where I came. I just wanted to get there. And, you know, that feeling, I remember running up the hill as you come up and then you run down into the town. I should know the names of everywhere, but I remember there was a Robbie Williams song, Let Me Entertain You, came on, and I was like singing as it was going up. I was like, come on, Robbie Williams, push me up the hill. So got up the hill and then I could hear the music. People were walking with their bikes, they finished. I felt a bit, oh, it's taken me so long. Look, I'm still here. Come on, you're still here. And I could hear your voice. I could hear you. You're an Ironman and all this. I could hear you. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can smell the finish line. It's right there. And that just, it was the best. Honestly, crossing that finish line, hearing your voice and everyone being so, you know, waiting for so long for people like me to finish. They were still as energetic and as excited. I can imagine as seeing the first people come through. They were just, I was so thankful for that. And it was the best feeling.
Yeah, I remember calling you across the finish line. And the way it works in the tower is the names come up on a little computer beside us. And obviously I knew who you were. It was like Adrian Bunn crossing the finish line as well. Yes. I was like, oh, you know, because you want everybody to finish, but some people you're just like, oh, they just need that extra little bit of like, oh, and you're so excited when you see them throughout the day or on the finish line. But then I saw you coming. I was so excited for you. And then to see your reaction on the finish line as well, it was just like, oh my word.
I still can't believe I did it. And I got to start with so many incredible women who qualified and were the best in the world there. And here's me with, you know, I said this before, I felt kind of, I wasn't sure if I feel like a small fish in a big pond type thing and feel a bit out of my depth, but everyone was so, so welcoming. I can't even begin to tell you how amazing that whole experience was in terms of atmosphere, you know, everyone just being so nice to each other as well. I was thinking, you know, am I going to be okay here? The main thing for me was just to get to the finish line. I was doing the hardest race in the world. Like, I'd trained in heat. I'd done so much training. I'd done training in, like, I'd gone to Tenerife to train. I'd gone to, like, Lanzarote and Club La Santa, because obviously the wind in Lanzarote is the best I could get I'll be honest.
You could have come to the west of Ireland too, because it was fairly rough yesterday.
Yeah, I know. And now it was just like, I need to learn how to handle wind on the bike. I need to get confidence. So I tried my best to put myself in as many situations to be as in control as possible, because obviously when you're not prepared for it, it then becomes a problem, and it then would cause anxiety. So if I could control the controllables, that would prepare me for the race.
Annie, you know, the things that you mentioned there in terms of the prep for Kona, they're all things that every athlete, if they have the means to do so, would willingly go and do it. But for you, with the added pressure of the epilepsy, did you have to make any other special tweaks to your preparation or to race day itself to facilitate the ability to get to the finish line, away from your athletic ability and all of that, but just in terms of the epilepsy?
Well, obviously in training, we have to add in as much recovery as possible, because if I'm doing too much, like it's like anything, obviously stress is a big trigger. Tiredness, so getting really tired is a huge trigger for me. Like if I overdo it, you know, it's like anything. So, you know, the big sessions after big sessions, I can't necessarily do loads of big sessions back to back. I just can't. I have to build it really gradually. We had loads of recovery in there, loads. Nick was amazing with me with it. And we worked on things like, we really worked on so much to prepare me as much as possible. But I guess one of the things with like race day, a huge thing is, like I said, control the controllables. So I put in like all my bags. I put in extra tablets. So I put in extra tablets. So I was able to, like, I've got extra medication. That took an issue off, like, worry. I only need to take medication like twice a day, but I thought it's in there and it's fine. I spoke to all the race organizers. That's a huge thing. I got a different color swim hat. Do you know what I mean? Those things take an element of stress and anxiety away, which help not control my epilepsy, but it means I'm less likely to have a seizure. So if I can do certain things like that, which is what I did, that then takes a bit of a stress off. And I know I've kind of almost got like a comfort blanket around. I had an epilepsy band on, which I always wear, that says I've got epilepsy. Everybody knew, and I felt really comforted. So I thought if I was to flag somebody, someone would know. So that is something that I do with every race. But I mean, a seizure, but a seizure is going to pop through whether I, you know, it can pop through regardless. I could be having the best time of my life and I just feel like this aura is coming on. I'm like, oh, great, here we go. And I just have to pull over. So I don't really know, because I only know when you're saying about other athletes training, and, you know, I only know what I know. That sounds really daft, but yeah, I know that I have to adapt whatever I do to accommodate it.
So what you do, the adaptations that you do, they're what you do anyway. So we just didn't know about them. Do you know the kind of way? So I was in Lanzarote training for my race in Mallorca. So trying to get adapted to the heat, get used to the hills. Yeah. Just spend 2 weeks out on my bike and doing a bit of training so that when I come home, I can kind of just keep ramping up. Although based on my performance yesterday, I wasn't too happy with my lack of ability running off the bike, but we have still got a few weeks to go. But I suppose all of that is just normal. Every adaptation that you make for your race is just normal to you. It's not normal to me for me to tell the race director, you know, there's something wrong with me, so there isn't. So I don't need the hat. I don't need the race director to know different things. In terms of your training then, Annie, I presume you can't go out and do like an open water swim on your own or go out on the bike on your own, or can you?
I have to say this, and I normally say this with anything I talk about. Everyone knows their epilepsy different. What works for me doesn't necessarily work for everybody else. I find with swimming in general is probably, most people panic about me in the swim the most, but it's actually the thing that I love the most, because they say that swimming is good for your mental health. So by having that, it's just like, it calms me and it means that I just feel so relaxed with it. But that being said, if I've had like, I don't know, I've had like a cluster of seizures the day before and I'm feeling a bit better, I will drag my husband in to train with me. So we'll go training, or I'll go with a group, or I'll adapt the swim so it's a bit shorter. I'll do something that basically allows me as safe as possible to do it. But you kind of Yeah, I just get on with it. I don't know. I just get on with it. But you have to adapt depending on how bad the seizure actually is.
I have a specific interest in the whole area of epilepsy as well because of my wonderful sister, Michelle. And, you know, I see the struggles that she has sometimes to go and even to go out for a walk in the evening, or she likes doing her Joe Wicks exercises and stuff. And we, during COVID, we brought her in swimming. She was sea swimming and things like that, which we need to get back into again. Michelle, if you're listening to the podcast, you'll know that it's going to happen very soon. But in terms of, I suppose, people who want to not just do triathlon, but just to progress with their sport anyway, regardless of their epilepsy, have you tips or insight maybe that if somebody has been recently diagnosed or maybe does have epilepsy, you know, how they can take the first steps towards embracing sport, whether it's at the level that you're at, Annie, or whether it's simply, you know, deciding to run a 5K? What sort of advice would you give to somebody who's maybe listening, or to somebody who has a family member who's considering stepping into sport?
I think first and foremost, you've got to find the fun element. Like, I think don't put pressure on yourself. You know, there's a lot of people who are super speedy and that's great for them and that's what they want to do. And if they love that, that is amazing. And I, you know, I would love to be fast. I'm not fast. I call myself look pro, go slow. And I just, you know, I think you really do have to make sure that you are enjoying whatever it is and don't compare yourself to others. I think that's been a huge thing, especially in triathlon. Sometimes you think that you have to be the fastest and you have to be the best. And, you know, once upon a time, I was a bit like, oh, I'm not doing, when someone asked me my time on something, I'd be like, oh, it's not the best time. And I'm like, why am I apologizing for this? Like, I had a great time. Like, I high-fived all the kids, you know, like, and I think just making sure that you're enjoying it. Take it steady. Don't pile too much pressure on yourself. I definitely say with triathlon, there's groups out there that, you know, train together. It doesn't have to be like an elite group or anything. You have different abilities, different ages. Everyone's picking up triathlon, you know, at different points in their lives, especially. And different, you know, even if it's running or whatever, everyone's picking it up at different points of their lives. And we've all got different reasons as well why we're doing it. So I think just take the pressure off yourself. Just go out. You know, I love going with other people. I find that actually making it more of a social thing makes it even better for me. And that's why I love that where I am in a race normally is you get all the chatty lot. We all talk. And I love that. And that's great because I don't know, I spoke to so many people at on the marathon at Kona. And, you know, I made some really good friends, and I was just, you know, friends on Facebook, friends on Instagram now. And I think you can find people who are on at your level as well, and at your on a similar journey to you. So there are people out there, and I think that makes it more fun. So I would definitely say, you know, take it at a steady pace. Don't put pressure on yourself. Don't compare yourself to others. Give it a go. You know, I'm trying out different sports at the moment. Like I said, I'm learning how to snowboard. I'm covered in more bruises than I've ever been covered in before. But I'm loving it. I'm loving the challenge. And I think, you know, it might not be the best, but I'm enjoying it. And I've actually made friends with a load of snowboarding girls here. And they're all like, come out with us. You know, that's part of it. The social side as well.
When you look back to 2014 and the very first triathlon, we're now in 2024. You have come a hell of a long way since that very first event. Yeah. How has the sport of triathlon positively impacted your life?
Wow, that's a question. Wow, I haven't even really had a chance to sort of look back because I'm so fixated on what I did at Kona. I'm still on cloud nine about it, to be honest. But if I'm looking back and I'm like, I didn't have clip-in pedals. I didn't have clip-ins. I am thinking about how I was then to how I am now. And I was so nervous for that sprint because it was totally new. And I realized when I crossed that finish line, I was like, oh, well, I actually really enjoyed this and I enjoyed the challenge. And I thought, let's just see what else we can do. And I think by having the challenge of the different kinds of races, the different kinds of, there's all sorts of things you can do with triathlon. I think that's what I like a lot. And also, I'm not the best runner on its own. So I kind of feel like I've got two other sports to warm me up for the run. And I find that that's actually better for me. And it's just been such a positive impact from I've made some amazing friends from it as well. Like at races, like I say, training wise, it's just been such a positive thing. And being able to, like Ironman inviting me to do the world championships and be an ambassador athlete, as someone who's got epilepsy, giving me that platform to be able to raise more awareness and doing triathlon as an epileptic. I've had messages from people around the world talking about my epilepsy. As far as I'm concerned, that's my job. That's what I need to be doing. And by doing triathlon, that's given me that platform to talk about it. So it goes hand in hand with it, if that makes sense. So it's positive on a social and a, fitness sense, but it's also from an epilepsy sense, I've been able to spread awareness through it. I've been able to test myself and really push myself in a positive manner as well. And I love it. I just absolutely love it.
You reflect on the 10 years now that you've had in the sport of triathlon, but then take me back to maybe the few years before that. And you look at what your life was then when you were told you were depressed and they were looking to put you on antidepressants. You didn't have an epilepsy diagnosis. And you think to where you are now. It's amazing, really, isn't it? The journey that you've been on. And I know that triathlon has played a huge part in it and sport has played a huge part in it. But if you look at the Annie from, say, 2010 to 2014 and the Annie from 2020 to 2024, they're polar opposites, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. I would actually say, and it sounds, I'm sorry, because it's going to sound a bit like it's a bit sad. I actually felt like I lost a lot of my 20s, which is probably why, as my husband says, I'm leading such more of a rad life. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I spent my 30s basically making up for all that time that I lost from being so confused. And so I just didn't feel like doing anything, when I was having these episodes, I'd stop doing the activity or I'd avoid certain things. And I found that I just kind of closed off and I just didn't do anything. And then obviously now it's completely different. And I make sure that I'm being as honest and open as possible, and doing as many things as possible, because I've lost that time. Like, I just feel like, well, you know what? Let's give it a go. I'll try it, and that's my attitude now, because you only get so many trips around the sun, and I kind of feel like might as well try it and see how I get on. But yeah, totally opposite. I did maybe a few aerobics classes, but even then I had a seizure doing one of the running tracks. So then I stopped doing it. So totally, totally opposite. Wasn't active, didn't have a healthy diet, was very focused on like what I was eating and obsessed with that, because I was involved in like diet culture and stuff like that and burning calories and following diets and stuff. And that's not, I'm about balance now. I'm totally about balance. It's a totally different mindset. I feel like I'm two different people when I look at that, and I'm happy with this version of me. I appreciate where the old me has come, because by going through that, it's made me realize that this is how I want to live and this is what I want to do. And that sounds a bit deep, but
I totally get it. It's like you're two different versions of yourself based on the circumstances that have been presented to you. So I can imagine those few years where the seizures were happening, but they were undiagnosed, was a lot of it was maybe spent questioning everything and where was life going to bring me. And there's a little bit of feel the fear and do it anyway. But when you don't know what the do it anyway is going to be because of the epilepsy that's undiagnosed, it's very hard to actually progress and to stay motivated and to focus. Whereas now, at least 10 years ago, you had the diagnosis. I presume there's medication involved in keeping the seizures at bay for the most part.
For the most part, they're good.
And that's another balancing act as well. I absolutely know that's another balancing act as well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, anyone who has epilepsy will tell you that it's just basically a game of moving around medication, because sometimes you can have medication that works for so long, which is what happened with mine. There was a point when I felt like I was going to be nearly seizure free and get my driving license back. And then all of a sudden I started having nocturnal seizures. And then I started having breakthrough daytime seizures. And you change your dosage, you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to deal with, but yeah, there's a lot that comes with it.
And a positive note, when you think of the finish line in Kona, what sort of feeling do you get? Don't tell me you're going to get an aura now, please.
No. I get like a, this is like its own emotion. You know, like I was saying, like in a seizure, this is its own emotion, because I just get like a really nice, warm, bubbly feeling that I'm like, oh my gosh, I did that. Not only did I do that, I did that with having my condition, all the training I did whilst having to deal with my condition, and then all the stuff that happened on race day. And yet I still smiled the entire way around and just made my peace with the fact that I will get to the finish line. I don't care when it is, but I'll get there. And I'm so incredibly proud of myself for doing that. And that doesn't sound like big-headed, but I feel like I am so proud of myself for doing that. And, you know, doing it without having a seizure as well is, for that amount of time, I'll take it.
It's amazing. No, it genuinely is amazing. I mean, completing an Ironman is such a huge challenge when you don't have those health challenges behind it. And then to go to Kona and to race like you did and to face the challenges that you did across everything you've just mentioned and to finish well within the cutoff, may I add. I think it was 16 hours and 3 minutes, was it? Something like that. Three minutes. You might have to try and get back again another time.
Actually, that'll be coming quite soon. I've got another Ironman.
Yes, you do. So you're going to Klagenfurt.
I am. Yes, I have. I'm heading to California first in May to do Ironman Morabay 70.3. I love that area of California. As you can obviously tell, I like to kind of be a racecation person.
Yes, absolutely. Triathlon tourist.
Triathlon tourist, yes, quite. And then Ironman, I've heard it's a really good swim. So
beautiful.
That is the one that I'm so excited about going. It's going to be interesting because obviously it's going to be completely different to Kona, but I am so excited about doing it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Based on having done your very first Ironman in Kona through that invitation from the World Championships team, how will you adapt your training now that you know what it's like to complete an Ironman?
Well, luckily, I've got a bit of altitude training here where I am currently. And so I'm going to really heavily rely on that. There's a lake down the road for me, so I can kind of mirror quite a lot of the, again, it's like matching the scenario with my training as much as possible. You know, I used full gas quite a lot with the Kona. So I like to kind of pre-do a race before I do a race on there. So I have an idea of what I'm kind of expecting. Again, it's like, you know, control the controllables again, you know, like what can I do that's going to be similar? And so, yeah, I'll be adapting my training slightly from like salty water swims to like lake swims and trying out my different kit, what wetsuit works best. Because obviously it was non-wetsuit for Kona, which I actually really enjoyed. I know a lot of people are nervous about that, but I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, I'll be adapting my training that way and heavily relying on the altitude training up here for a little bit of extra oomph.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Annie. A hugely inspiring story. And I wish you every success for the season ahead. And hopefully I will get to call you across the finish line at some point throughout the next few months. God knows where you'll end up or I'll end up. Hopefully we'll get to meet in person again. But thank you so much for joining us on the Try Talking Sport podcast. It's been a pure pleasure chatting with you today.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell my story and talk more about epilepsy awareness as well. So thank you. And thank you for making my Kona finish line one of the most incredible experiences of my life. So thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can get in touch with any feedback or guest suggestions by emailing me on trytalkingsport@gmail.com. If you would like to hear more great episodes of the podcast, be sure to check them out on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow all of our activities and podcasts on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. If you have any feedback or guest suggestions, please email me on trytalkingsport@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, thanks for listening. Stay safe, keep smiling, and remember to look for fun and adventure in every day.